We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? Bronx Pinstripe Show number 21. I am back from Europe, and it is good to be back. I feel like I've missed a ton of Yankees baseball, and being out of the loop is no fun. So, Scott, what's up, man?
You and me both, brother. I have been traveling pretty much all week myself, just for work and for a little bit of pleasure. And, you know, it's keeping up. Thank God for technology. I got to tell you that much, because this week's been definitely trying for me keeping up with everything. But, you know, ready to go. I think there's really – it's such a different story with the Yankees. It seems like every other day, you know what I mean? Like we're up, we're down, we're up, we're down. So, you know, we can mow through these games and kind of talk about a bunch of things, because I know there's a lot of stuff that happened this week.
There is, yeah. Not only am I out of the loop on the Yankees, but I'm out of the loop on what you've been doing. What have you been up to?
Good Lord, man. I tell you. So I was, you know, up for Old Timers Day. My wife and I went to Nashville this week, and right before that trip, I wasn't even going to go, but my wife has a teacher's conference in Nashville, and she had, you know, hotel room paid for and all that stuff. So I was like, you know,
that.
No, exactly. And well, one of the tipping point for me was when I get home, my AC unit is out and my computer's fried. I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is great to come home to. Apparently, there was an electrical storm over the weekend, and it fried my computer. My hard drive is completely shot. So that was no fun to come home to. And the AC unit was out, and it was going to take a couple of days for it to get repaired. So I was like, I'm going with you. There's AC in Nashville. I could do what I need to do during the day from the hotel room. So yeah, you know, packed a bag and we went to Nashville.
I like that style. You're just like, everything's broken. Screw it. I don't want to deal with it
leaving.
Now. I'll deal with it in a couple weeks.
Exactly. That's exactly how it went down. And then today, the Sunday, right before, literally like 5 minutes, we started recording after the game today. And like, I swear, literally like 4:55, we're recording at 5. I hear this screeching noise and like a bang coming from outside. And I go outside and my AC unit again has blown up practically with the fan not working. And oh my God. So yeah, it's been a pretty interesting week and a half for me. But I'm alive and I'm healthy right now. So, you know, and there's Yankee baseball on. So,
well, it's 50 degrees and raining where I am right now. So I don't need air conditioning. So what would you rather have?
Yeah, I mean, it's still like 60 degrees, or actually it's like 75 degrees right now. So we got a little bit of a cool front, which is good. But, you know, I'm heading back up. I'll be in New York again this weekend and going to Hank's Yanks or this coming weekend, the Hank's Yanks golf tournament on Monday at the new Trump course in the Bronx. So I'm really excited about that and going to be able to meet a bunch of those guys too, which will be a lot of fun.
Nice.
I'll definitely have some good stuff to report after that.
So do we know which of the players or members of the organization are going to be there?
Yeah, there's actually going to be a lot. Current Yankees, A-Rod's going to be there. And there is a dinner that is honoring Dellin Betances, basically for a lot of the charity work that he does in the area. So that will be the two main guys, I believe, from the current squad. But there's going to be a whole bunch of former Yankees there. Reggie's going to be there. All the Yes guys are going to be there. A lot of the guys from Old Timers Day, actually, like Leiritz and Cecil Fielder, I think like Graham Lloyd, people like that. So there's a whole list of them. If you go to the website for the Hank's Yanks Golf Tournament, there's a whole list of all the people that are going to be there, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm pretty jealous, man. I'm pretty jealous.
it's going to be an interesting one for sure. And the cocktail hour, which is like an hour before the dinner, that's when I think A-Rod's going to be there. Donald Trump's going to be there. And that's, you have pretty much access to go and mingle with these guys. So I'm going to try to sneak in with you know, maybe my iPhone and put it on video and just see what I can get.
Possibly future president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Possibly. You never know. You never know.
All right. So
so it'll be interesting. Interesting. And I just hope I don't have to sweat through this entire week, because I know when, you know, June, July hits, AC companies take forever to get to you. So here's one for the big men upstairs that they can get to me in the next, 24 to 48 hours.
All right, I'm pulling for you, man. I'm pulling for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
As I mentioned, I was away for a week and a half or so. So a shout out to Rich and RJ for filling in. That was pretty much how I stayed up to date on the Yankees, is listening to the podcast. So nice job, guys. And a lot of stuff happened while I was gone. It's pretty tough to follow American sports over in Europe with the 6-hour difference. Honestly, it's like I would just forget half the time that the game was on at that point, or, you know, I'd check my phone, and because I, you know, I was only in and out of Wi-Fi spots, so I'd check my phone and I'd see a bunch of updates. Also, I feel like I lost touch with when the finals, the NBA finals and the Stanley Cup finals were ending. So sort of, you know, it was an awesome trip and a lot of fun, but glad to be home and back to the usual Yankees baseball and sports and all that stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially when games are starting, 7, 8 o'clock. That's, you know, you're past midnight at that point.
Yeah, so 1 a.m.
At least you have a Yankees podcast you could listen to and catch up for the week.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, beautiful. Like, there you go.
So let's jump into what happened this past week. So the current record for the team is 41-35, and they're tied for second with Baltimore in the AL East, a half game behind Tampa. And the only team pretty much out of it right now are the Red Sox. Toronto is only a game out, so four teams bunched up at the top there. And I think it's starting to shape up where that's how it's going to be the rest of the year.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, I think these four teams are going to be there for a long time, probably the long haul. And you never know with the Red Sox. I mean, what, they're eight games out, nine games out today?
Yeah, they look done. They look totally done.
They do look done, but you just never know, especially with the – because they do have a lot of prospects, and, you know, they could potentially do something at the trade deadline that could be a major move. I mean, eight games out, nine games out, whatever it is not – too much to overcome. Obviously, it's a lot harder when you have four teams above you that are so close. But, you know, you just never want to count them out, especially when, you know, the Yankees, Red Sox, the way that they play each other, you know, for us, I think it's never going to be an easy bout with those guys. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, we've said this all along. I think we said this in the beginning of the season, really, is that this is going to be any man's or any team's division, and it's going to go all the way through the end of the season.
It is. It's going to be close. We're going to look in the middle of September, and it's going to be a game or two that separates two, three, maybe even four of these teams. So you got to win your division games. That's the bottom line. You know, those games are really important. And this week we didn't have any division games. Philly and Houston. Philly sucks. and unfortunately, I lost two out of three of them. And then a split with Houston, who is a pretty good team. I think a lot of us think of Houston of last year, probably one of the worst teams in the league, but they are a pretty good team this year. So let's jump into these games. Monday, they lost to Philly 11-8. You know, not the offense's fault, but when you give up 11 runs, you know, Pineda did not look good. He got crushed. I was not in the country for this game, so, you know, I didn't see much of it, but Pineda's line was pretty terrible. He gave up 11 hits and 8 runs and 3 and a third, probably one of his worst, if not his worst, outing of the year.
And, you know, it seems with him, and unfortunately it's become our top two pitchers. I know we'll talk about Tanaka in a minute, but, you know, for Pineda, it seems like he's either just dominant or he's completely terrible. And it's, you know, he's Mr. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and that's not something we really want from our number two. You know, we definitely want more consistency. You know, I can take a few outings here and there, but when it's like every other or close to that, that's troublesome to me. And, you know, really, it's hard to rely on a guy like that. So, hopefully, you know, he could find some more consistency. He definitely pitched a lot better today. So,
yeah, and I do think of Pineda as, you know, our 1A or something. You know, Tanaka and him are both our, you know, our quote-unquote aces for, you know, whoever's number one, who knows. But a bad game for him should not be 11 hits and 8 runs and 3 and a third. He should be able to gut through 5, get him into the 6th, and have the team in the game. And he just wasn't able to do that. And against a really, really bad Philly lineup. Like, let's not forget that. He's not, I mean, Astros are a good lineup, and he pitched well today. You know, some of these other teams in the league that are good lineups, I understand if you have a bad day. But to give up 8 runs to Philly, that's pretty terrible.
Yeah, and, you know, since Girardi has kind of talked about going with this 6-man rotation too, we'll really see how that affects some of these guys. And, you know, maybe that has something to do with Pineda and, you know, maybe the extra day of rest and just something his body's got to get used to and, you know, getting back into those routines, because these guys are absolutely creatures of habit, and you know, they have their routines and they follow them, you know, like clockwork. So getting that extra day could definitely you know, put him in a little bit of a different situation and something he'll have to adjust to.
So sort of a breakout star for the Phillies this year is Franco, the third baseman. He had 4 hits and 5 RBIs on Monday, and then he followed that up on Tuesday, in which the Yankees lost 11-6 with another 5 RBIs. Well, I guess we'll get into this in a second, but that's sort of the only bright spot for the Phillies. And a report was circulating on Twitter that the Yankees missed out on him by $5,000 in a signing bonus, which I think in 2010, the Phillies offered him $100,000, the Yankees $95,000. Obviously, he took the extra $5,000. It's just one of those funny little coincidences, I think. I don't think you can really blame the Yankees because he was not a high prospect. You can tell that by the $100,000 signing bonus. But it's just one of those funny things that people were getting mad about on Twitter when, in reality, no one really knew he was going to be a good player.
Right, because if he had a bad series, then nobody would have even known that stat, right?
Exactly.
I mean, he could have a terrific year, and then you know, a bad couple of games against the Yankees, and that stat would, or that number probably never would have been released by the media because it would have been irrelevant. But because it was, and because he did well, we try to find things that'll piss us off and make us angry, and that was one of them that definitely got people fired up. So, I mean, I get it. Yeah, it's 5,000, but like you said, he was not a top prospect, and it's kind of one of those things that, you know, just kind of applaud a guy for you know, kind of just doing better than he really was projected to, and you know, good for him, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for the Phillies, it's really him and Cole Hamels are the only two bright spots on that team, and for the Yankees to lose 2 out of 3 is sort of tough. On Tuesday, Sabathia also did not look good. He again got rocked in the middle innings, gave up a run in the third and then 5 runs in the fourth, and as we said, 5 more RBIs for Franco. So, you know, just really another bad performance for CeCe.
It just seems like he's not, every time we talk about this and we're saying, you know, we hope he can get used to pitching like this and, you know, throwing in the high 80s, low 90s, and really working the count and, you know, making that slider the complete pitch that he needs, you know, to pitch to guys, at, you know, in that zone, in that 88 to 91 zone. And it just seems like it hasn't happened, and I don't know how it's going to click all of a sudden if it hasn't happened yet. I mean, we're getting to the middle of the season, and if he's not figuring it out by now, it's, you know, there's a tough argument out there for him to say that he's going to figure it out halfway through the season.
And it sucks because I love CeCe. I always love him for the 09 World Series, and he was a workhorse for them. And you saw it the other night when A-Rod got thrown at by Oberholzer. CeCe was on the top step, ready to go, ready to defend his teammates. And that's what you love about CeCe. He still brings that fire and that energy, like he's throwing 96 miles an hour, but he's only throwing 89 miles an hour. So, you know, he needs to learn how to pitch because he's not going to bowl people, you know, he's not going to just blow it past you anymore. So he's going to really need to figure out how to pitch. And
it just seems like we keep saying that. You know what I mean? Like, I know that you're never going to not get the competitor side of CeCe, because that's just who he is. That's just in him, the competitor. And that's what you saw, you know, rising out of the dugout when A-Rod got hit. But if he doesn't have the ability anymore to pitch the way he needs to with his current skill set, you know, I don't know how much, you know, teaching an old dog new tricks, I don't know how much he's really going to improve. I mean, we've seen guys have resurgence in their career, but it just doesn't seem like it's clicking with him.
I don't know what the solution is. All I know is that he's not going to figure it out, I don't think, pitching in the major league. So maybe he needs to make a couple, maybe he needs, you know, sort of a mental break from the major leagues for a little while, have a couple rehab starts and sort of try and regroup. Maybe that's the answer.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. It's going to be tough to get him into the minor leagues for starts like that, unless there is some kind of an injury. Or we've seen the Yankees do that before, right?
A lot of teams have
done
that.
There's a quote injury.
Yeah,
and then he goes down. But, you know, tired arm, something like that could send him down for a little while. But, yeah.
So
who knows, man? I mean, he needs something.
He does. Another thing from this game that was bad was the Yankees were 1 for 12 with runners in scoring position.
Yep. one for 12 with runners in scoring position takes me back to the 2013-2014 Yankees when we couldn't hit anything when there was a man standing on second or third base. So, you know, but they've been pretty decent, I think, throughout the season. We haven't really been harping on that as a big issue with this team offensively. So, you know, they're going to run through streaks like that where we're just not going to get it done during certain series. So.
But it was a 6-6 game going into the ninth inning, and Betances, who had come in the eighth to get out of a little jam, he got rocked in the ninth, ended up being his first career loss, which is amazing considering he had, you know, 90 innings that he pitched last year and already up to about, you know, whatever, 40 innings this year. So for him to have his first career loss this far into a season, can't really get mad at the guy. It's just, we've never seen that before. We've never seen Betances get hit like that.
Not as a relief pitcher, no. But, you know, we've seen him, I think, get hit. If you followed his minor league career, you know, he definitely had his troubles, you know, later at the end when he was a starter. But, yeah, you're right. He's never been touched up like this in the major leagues as a reliever. So it's weird to see just because his stuff is so good. It's very strange to see people touch him up like that. But, you know, I'm chalking it up for a bad outing, and that's it, because he's come back and just been dominant since then. So
me too. There were times that Mariano went out there and gave up four or five runs and looked like he was just totally lost. But you knew he was going to come back the next day, and if it was a 1-0 game with the Yankees on the lead, that's the guy you wanted out there, and he'd get him 1-2-3. So I think it was just a bad game for Betances, and it looks like he was able to just, you know, shake it off and come back out, and he pitched well in Houston, so I wouldn't read too much into that bad game last week.
Well, and talking about that too, I mean, just talking about how Mariano would, if he had a bad outing and came back and you knew he was going to come back and do well, that just kind of speaks to the mindset and the way that these guys work. And I think Betances does have that quality where he forgets what just happened. I mean, it didn't happen. And he goes out there like it's a new day, and he knows his stuff and he believes in his stuff. And that's great, because a lot of guys cannot do that. And to see that similar quality in those two guys, where he could just forget about things of, you know, a career bad outing the day before, a couple of days before, and then he just goes out and dominates, you know, that's awesome to see. And it's definitely a testament to who he is, you know, as a competitor.
Absolutely. You know what else is awesome to see?
What's that?
Supernova's back, baby.
That is. That's awesome, man. I mean, we needed a little bit of a spike in the side, right? A little bit of a jolt of energy, and I think Nova's coming back to give us that.
Yeah, Wednesday, day baseball, 10-2 win against the Phillies. First game back for Ivan Nova from Tommy John surgery, and he was unbelievable. 6 2/3, 3 hits, no runs. All reports are that he still feels good. His arm feels good. He's healthy from that game, which is the major concern, you know, when a guy's coming back from surgery. But I don't know if you could have expected anything better than that for a return.
No, he looked good. He was throwing the ball well. And, you know, just to see him come out of that. One, he went pretty deep in the game. I mean, he went into the seventh inning, which is a lot more than we could say for a lot of the guys in the rotation. So his first start back, you know, getting deep into the game like that was definitely a very good sign. And the fact that his arm feels good afterwards is a tremendous sign, because, you know, if this team is going to compete at the end of the season and is going to be in for the division or even a wild card, kind of going off topic, where we were talking about the division, if you look at the standings right now, what we thought would never come out of the AL East, very possibly could come out of the AL East, because there is no clear second place in the American League right now. So I think everybody's in for a wild card, so there could be two people to come out. But anyway, the for us to compete later in the season and to really you know, make it deep, we need a healthy Ivan Nova.
And he's a competitor. Everyone's always, all the reports are that he was so upset about being injured last year, and he just could not wait to get back on the mound. And you love to see that from a guy. He's always been a competitor with the Yankees. I remember his rookie year, his first game ever, he was in Toronto pitching, and he had bases loaded in one of the early innings with nobody out, and he got out of it, no runs. And right there, instantly, you knew he was a competitor, and he was a guy that you wanted on the mound in a big situation. So I think Nova could be a real wild card for this rotation.
I totally agree. I mean, we've had a lot of inconsistencies at the bottom. You know, Warren has been kind of a godsend for the bullpen, for the rotation, because, you know, he's just really given some stability into the back of it. But, you know, with the troubles that CC's had, with the inconsistencies that Eovaldi has had, injuries at the top, you know, having him back as kind of that steady guy in the middle is definitely very important.
So with him back, as you said, we're going to a six-man rotation. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think for the time being, it's okay. Again, we're going to have to see how these guys, they're just not used to it. I think Tanaka's fine with it because that's how he used to pitch. I mean, he was even longer than 6 days, I believe, when he was in Japan. But, you know, you have guys like Pineda and CeCe and Eovaldi who have pitched on five-day rotations for a long time. And so we're going to have to see how they react to it. And if this is something that he's going to be doing, that Girardi's going to be sticking with, you know, I kind of hope he gives it its fair shake and does it for a little while and lets these guys get into their kind of new groove and their new, you know, day-to-day habits and really settle into this six-man thing, because I don't think it's something that's you could do very short term. I think that will ultimately hurt the starting pitchers.
So when it gets a little tricky is when you have like two off days a week, which we've seen recently with those two-game interleague series. But I think if you just got one off day a week, it can go pretty smoothly, at least on paper. So, and they want to limit Pineda's innings, they've talked about. Obviously, they don't want to push Tanaka too far. And who knows, maybe an extra day off for CeCe every day can have him pitch in an extra mile or two faster. And he, you know, maybe has a little bit more zip on the ball. You never know. So, you know, give it a shot, I guess. I think people see six-man rotation and they think it's like some weird thing. Like, they think it's... because it's never been done before, they think it's bad. But you know, let's see what happens.
I honestly wouldn't put it past Major League Baseball to see this as a trend coming up, with all of the, you know, all of the money that's being spent on these top line starting pitchers and all the specialists and, you know, just player safety and all of these things that come out this day in the new age baseball, you know, protecting a guy and limiting his innings a little bit more. I would not be surprised to see teams to start do this, especially if someone can find success with it.
The thing that it gets interesting for me is that if six-man rotations become the norm and you're pitching a six-man rotation the whole season, come October when you're not going to have six starters, you're probably going to have four, then guys are pitching on 2 days shorter than normal. That could get a little interesting.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I don't think it's going to be a consistent thing throughout. I could see it kind of like the shift, right? The shift kind of evolved, and then now everybody's doing it. I could see the six-man rotation kind of sliding into that. You know, there's so many specialty guys in the bullpen now, too, that you can kind of protect everybody. And I think by protecting people in the bullpen with all these specialty one-inning guys and, you know, pitch restrictions and, I don't know, it just seems like it's trending in that direction.
Yep, and as you said, it comes down to all the money invested in these guys. You want to keep them healthy as long as possible. So,
at the same time, though, a lot of money is invested in them. You want them on the field,
right.
You know, for your product. So, you know, there's a couple of ways to look at it. But Nolan Ryan will not go to a six-man rotation. I would put a lot of money on that.
He wants to go back to a four-man rotation.
Yeah, and then pitch counts. He doesn't even know that. That is not in his dictionary.
No, he was out there to pitch nine innings, and that's the bottom line.
That's right.
All right, Thursday, they had a four-game series in Houston. Thursday was the first game, and Keuchel pitched. It was the first time I really watched a full game of his. He was pretty nasty. Complete game shutout, 12 Ks. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, I was following this game on my phone. I was traveling. I was pretty much in airports all day on Thursday. But every time I looked back, I mean, it just there was another K on the board. But, yeah. I saw the highlights. He's good. I mean, he really locates well, and he's got some just filthy stuff. So it was kind of the first time I'd really paid attention to him as well.
So he reminds me a little bit of Cliff Lee, you know, from 5 years ago, where he wasn't going to throw at 94 miles an hour past you. He was living in the upper 80s and the low 90s, but he was throwing on the inner half of the plate to righties, which is huge as a left-handed pitcher. And he was mixing in his changeup and curveball well, just sort of mixing speeds, mixing locations, and really the Yankees had no confident swings off of him. I think Chris Young had two hits, but even those were kind of bleeders. So really just nothing off Keuchel. And as I was watching this game, I was thinking, you know, CeCe's stuff is, you know, 88 to 90. He could really learn a thing or two from watching a guy like Keuchel pitch. And we just talked about this, I know, but it frustrates me when I see a guy that is successful at 88 miles an hour, and then I see another guy getting rocked at 88 miles an hour when CeCe should have good location, and I've seen him do it before. So it's just one of those things. I don't know.
I mean, the difference being, though, is this guy has pitched 88 to 90 his whole career, right? I mean, that's his zone, where CeCe was a completely different pitcher. When he was younger, you know, he's thrown in the high 90s. He was a power pitcher. So it's teaching – he's got to learn a completely different style, whereas this guy, this is how he came up pitching. This is how he's always pitched. So, you know, the difference between the two, like, obviously you could probably take things away by learning and seeing what someone in that spot is doing. But it takes time. I got to believe it takes time. I mean, you know, Andy Pettit's been in town and from what I've heard, been, you know, kind of working with CeCe a little bit too. But, you know, Andy Pettit never really had overpowering stuff. He had a good fastball, but later in his career, because his velocity went down, he had to be a little bit more, you know, tricky, I guess, and pitch a little bit more. But it wasn't as much of a transition for a guy like Pettit as it is for CeCe, who used to throw, you know, in the high 90s. So I don't know. You know, it's a thing that, you know, if he's going to make the adjustment or he's not, and that's going to be it. I don't think there's really going to be too much in between, as we're kind of seeing.
Another thing from this game that pissed me off was a lot of the Yankee hitters were complaining about the strike zone. And I'll give it to them that the pitchers were borderline, but the ump was calling them consistently the entire time. So when the ump's consistent, I think you just got to shut up and just deal with the strike zone and play ball. I hate every time there's a called strike turning around and complaining to the umpire.
Yeah, I didn't see that part of the game, but to me, if an umpire is being consistent with a strike, whether it's a little low, a little inside, a little outside, a little high, that's fine to me. I think as long as he's calling that same pitch both sides and calling it consistently throughout the game, then you know where that strike zone is, and you know, you really shouldn't have any complaints about it.
Yeah, it was inside, and it was also down. It was inside on the plate to righties, and it was down in the strike zone that he was calling. A little bit generous for Keuchel, and you know what? I think it's just one of those things that the Yankee hitters couldn't hit him anyway, so they were maybe taking a little bit of their frustrations out on the umpire.
Yeah, I actually did hear about the low strikes. I wasn't privy to the inside, but I definitely heard about the low strikes. I mean, I actually heard that on the radio when I was trying to catch the games in between flights. But again, man, you know, it's just one of those things. If he's guys calling a low strike, then that's what it is. So as long as he's consistent with it.
And Gardner sat out in this game, and he's probably been the Yankees' hottest hitter.
He's been awesome, maybe other than
Chris Young recently,
right?
And I understand it was probably a scheduled day off facing a tough lefty, and he had played 13 games in a row. But the flip side to that is Gardner's your center fielder right now, your leadoff hitter, and probably your hottest hitter, and you're taking him out against a tough pitcher where you could really use that bat in the lineup.
Yeah, I don't agree with the fact that you take him out against debatably the number one starter in the AL this year, you know, up until right now. Because Gardner has success against lefties as well, and you got to have your catalyst in there. You got to have that top of that lineup set if you're going to have any success against a guy like him. And, you know, he just sets the tone for the rest of the lineup. So I agree. I don't think it was – even if it was a scheduled day off, that would have been one I'd skipped and maybe gone the day after.
Totally agree, although it probably wouldn't have made much of a difference because, again, Keuchel was dominant. All right, so moving on to Friday, Yankees finally got a win in Houston 3-2, and Eovaldi had a solid start, 6 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits, and 2 walks. And the thing I noticed in this game was I was happy that Girardi didn't push him to the 7th inning because we've seen that before. And remember, at the time, the Yankees were down by 2 runs. They were getting shut out at this point. So, you know, good for Girardi for not trying to push Eovaldi. You know, good job, kid. You pitched 6 innings. You're keeping us in this game. Let's let the bullpen shut it down and see if our offense can chip away. So I commended Girardi for that move.
Yep, and that's back-to-back starts now from Eovaldi where he's had 2 quality starts. And, you know, the last one was Old Timers Day. Then he comes back and just, you know, he pitched really well. I mean, even that line, to tell you the truth, the 2 runs, they were kind of, you know, he gets a lot of, like, ground balls that just find small holes and little bloops and things like that that come across. And I think he pitched even better than that line, just by the eye, just watching it, because he was locating his pitch. His velocity was, you know, where it usually is, but he was really locating that splitter, and I think he was locating the fastball. And when he does that, he is nasty, and he is exactly what, you know, we thought he could be when he's good and locating. But I agree with the, you know, let's keep him positive. Let's just keep him positive and keep him going out on a high note.
Yep, I think momentum's a big thing for Eovaldi. And I think, like you said, keep the ball rolling with him and maybe he can get on a run.
Yep, I like it. I want to see what he's got. I want to see the ceiling for him.
All right, so the big hit in this game was Chris Young. 3-run bomb in the 7th inning basically won the game.
Dude, Chris Young, as like early in the season, he carried us.
He's back to April form.
Chris Young is back, baby. He's back in his. He's gonna have another good month, and then we'll see him in August. So, but he's been nasty. I think you have some stats for him for June, right?
Yeah, 370 average, 382 and 593 slugging in June, which is, you know, back, like I said, to the April form of Chris Young. He sort of took May off in a way, and now he's back. So we actually had an article on the site talking about what's new in Chris Young's approach since that May slump, and he's hitting a lot more line drives. He's pulling the ball more, and he's actually absolutely crushing lefties. So it's really good to see, especially with Ellsbury out. We need Chris Young right now.
Absolutely, especially against, you know, left-handed pitching. We need that power bat. Well, you know, he's been playing a lot because Girardi, on his side, something good that he's done. When he sees that Chris Young gets hot, he doesn't take him out of the lineup. Yeah. He really does keep him in, and that's kind of un-Girardi-like in a way, in my opinion.
Yeah, you got to play the hot hand with these guys.
I know, but a lot of times he doesn't. Like, Girardi's infamous for, oh, guy's hot, you know, he's run 3 games real hot, he'll sit him the next day. But to his credit, he has kept Chris Young out there, and Chris Young has been delivering time and time again. And that was a huge hit, just an absolutely huge hit in a big, big situation.
Yeah, and it's a homecoming for Chris Young, right? He's from the Houston area.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was Eovaldi's a Texas kid too. So we were really putting the Texas kids on display in Houston on Friday night. But, you know, again, another really solid thing and something that has come out of this game that we've seen over the past couple weeks now is when Miller went down, we've had guys step up in a big way in the back of that bullpen. Yep. Chasen Shreve, who has been, you know, the bounty of that trade to Atlanta, and Justin Wilson have really stepped up in that 7th and 8th inning role. And these guys have been phenomenal. They really have. I mean, Shreve is he's been doing it all season. I think Justin Wilson kind of came out a little slow, but lately he has been really, really good. And you can just see how much of a competitor he is. So, you know, I think the bullpen, I said this on Twitter the other night, is starting to kind of turn around a little bit and looking to be, you know, at least the back of that bullpen is starting to be, you know, that strength that we thought it was with Shreve, Wilson, Betances, and then when Miller gets healthy, that's a pretty nasty 4 spot.
It is. I would like to see one more right-hander in there that you can rely on.
And I think eventually it is going to be Adam Warren. I really do believe that. I think Adam Warren's going to be back there. You know, maybe Brian Mitchell can kind of fall into this role and kind of, you know, get into that bullpen and that right-hand reliever spot. That'd be something good to see, definitely, from Adam Mitchell.
All right, so Saturday's win, 9-6, to me was a little bit bittersweet because the offense jumped out to a 6-run lead. McCann had an absolute blast of a grand slam in the first inning. Then Chris Young adds on a 2-run home run in the second. Oberholzer gets thrown out of the game because he threw up and in on A-Rod, and it was 100% intentional. The ump tossed him, and he just walked into the dugout, didn't even put up a fight. That's a guy just quitting on his team. Just he knew he had nothing, and he just wanted to throw at the Yankees. So, you know, you hate that's just a bad sportsmanship all around, just absolute sort of scumbag move, in my opinion, out of Oberholzer.
Well, he actually got demoted after the game, too. He got demoted, and the Astros manager came out and publicly apologized. Yeah. He said, that's just not how we do things, and we're not going to put up with that. So they sent him down as, you know, I think it was pretty much for that. You know, they're just not going to take that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
And good for the Astros.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with throwing at a guy if it's retaliation because your guy got hit. You know, obviously you don't throw at the head, but you drill him in the middle of the back or something. But to throw at a guy because someone just is hitting you, again, it's just scumbag. But anyway, that was actually bad news for the Yankees because they couldn't get any offense going after he came out of the game. And Tanaka just did not look right. He walked the very first batter of the game, which immediately you knew maybe he was a little off because Tanaka never walks anybody. He was falling behind a lot of hitters. You know, his off-speed stuff looked sharp, but at the same time, he was, you know, he couldn't throw it for an out pitch because he was behind in a lot of counts. He had 98 pitches through five innings, which is very uncharacteristic, and he gave up six runs. So, you know, it was 6-6 when they took him out of the game. Just really pretty bad performance from Tanaka.
Yeah, and this is the type of thing. I mean, we've seen a few of the Tanaka starts where he's, you know, has not been so good. And you know, from the 1 and 2 guys, you want to see more consistency out of these two. And you know, hopefully Tanaka will bounce back. But he did get through five innings, so he kind of gutted out the five innings. Obviously, the fact that the Yankees had a 6-0 lead helped that. And that's, you know, kind of why he stood in the, I think that's why he stayed in the game as long as he did. But you know, thankfully the Yankees came back and won the game.
Yep, Tex had the big hit, opposite field double, two-run double in the eighth inning. I love when Tex goes opposite field because that's when you know he's really clicking.
Well, and there were a couple interesting things that happened in that inning, if you recall, too. There was I think it was a double play going. It was a double play ball going to second base, and Altuve received the ball, and Gardner slid hard. And Altuve kind of bobbled the ball, but it, from what I saw on the replay, and maybe this just wasn't conclusive enough, one, he was called safe at the bag, but it looked like Altuve touched the bag with his toe on the back of it, and then bobbled the ball on the transfer. Well, the umpire called, you know, did not touch the ball, did not touch the bag, bobble, everybody's safe. So that kind of gave some new blood there. And then there was a very close pitch to Teixeira right before he hit that double that would have been called strike three. So there were definitely some interesting calls in that inning that went the Yankees' way.
But you know what? You know, the Yankees caught a little break. You know, give an inch, take a mile. That's what I feel.
No doubt about it. If that happens, you got to make them pay for it, and they did. So Tex had a big one, and then Headley had a bomb too. Was it the next inning?
Yeah,
I think that thing is still going up. I mean, he hit that. He hit that ball hard, and it went high. It was a shot.
Yep, so got out of there with a nice 9-6 win. But because Tanaka only went five innings, sort of fried the bullpen yesterday. And today, going into the game, all the big guys, all the big guns, Betances, Shreve, and Wilson were unavailable for the game. So the Yankees were relying, they had to call up Esmiel Rogers and send down Gregorio Petit because they needed an extra arm out there. And anytime you're calling up Esmiel Rogers because you're thin on pitching, it's probably not a good thing. But this was Pineda's game pretty much from the start. And he did what they needed him to do. Obviously, he went eight innings, but the end result wasn't so great.
Well, yes, and you know, to his credit, there were some botched plays too. I mean, that ball in the left field was just there's not much to talk about. It was just a bad play all around. You know, the fly ball that went to left field, it was probably Garrett Jones' ball. Gardner was there. There was a miscommunication, and the ball dropped, and he scored actually.
Yeah. So the one you're talking about is Correa. He hit a deep fly ball to left center. Again, Garrett Jones is not. First of all, I don't think he's an outfielder, but he's definitely not a left fielder.
Left fielder, yeah.
Right. So he's running over, and I think that's Gardner's ball because he's the experienced outfielder and he's the center fielder. He needs to take charge and call that ball away from a guy who's playing out of position.
Totally agree. If it's a regular left fielder and a regular center fielder, the left fielder is going to catch that ball every time. But in that instance, I totally agree, and I think Gardner should have just taken charge. He was there. There was no definitive call on who had it. You know, obviously, I don't know what those guys said to each other that we couldn't hear or see, but Gardner should have absolutely taken control of the ball. And then he had a hard time picking the ball up, and Correa just kept running
Yeah.
And scored. So that was
it was ruled a double and a two bag error, but in my opinion, it should have been a four bag error. But you know, whatever, the run scored. And then, you know, it was 1-1 game. Pineda was still pitching strong. He had about 80 pitches in the seventh inning. Mm-hmm. And the one mistake he did make, though, with a guy on third and Gattis up, he left a hanging slider in the middle of the plate and Gattis hit a triple.
Yeah, that was a 400-foot triple. I mean, or 405, right? What's the wall? 405. It hit the wall, and he ended up on third base. Man, he wasn't even running hard. That's a big ballpark. But yeah, so that was a bad pitch. He left a couple of his pitches, his breaking balls, hanging that he got away with before that too. So you could tell he was starting to tire a little bit going into that inning. But yeah, he again, kind of a bad luck loss for him though, because he did pitch well.
Yeah, it's one of those games that I can't get really mad at Pineda, because he did what the team needed him to do. He gave him innings and he gave him a chance to win. Just the offense couldn't get anything going off McHugh, who was pretty tough as well. He only allowed 4 base runners in 8 innings.
Yep, and I'll tell you one thing, talking about this Astros team, and they've pretty much brought everybody up, right? They're going kind of all in on the youth movement in Houston this year, and they have some impressive players. I mean, we all know about Altuve, who's a young second baseman, but he's a dynamic guy. It looks like he's becoming the leader of that team. But then you got, you know, as Susan Walden says, the pride of Connecticut and George Springer. I mean, he's really starting to come into his own. And then this kid at short is, you know, he looks good. He's a big, strong kid, and he can run. He's kind of a five-tool guy.
Yeah, I mean, the Astros are a good team. I think, as I said earlier in the podcast, that people might look at a 2-game split in Houston and think that's bad. But with the way Houston's playing this year, you get 2 games out of 4 and you sort of call it a day.
Yep, I agree. You know, move on to the next, and hopefully we can have some success out west.
Yep, going out west to L.A., play the Angels for 3 games, and then they have an off day Thursday. And then they got a big series next weekend at Yankee Stadium against Tampa Bay. Obviously, Tampa's in first place right now, so got to win those division games, man.
Yeah, that's going to be huge. You know, hopefully we can come out of Anaheim, Los Angeles, with some decent games. You know, I can't stand these West Coast trips. They always kind of make me cringe when the Yankees go out there. But you know, hopefully they can come out healthy and on top. And you know, hopefully this game or this series with Tampa Bay can kind of be a little jolt in the side of the Yankees. You know, we play well at home, and let's go in there and take care of these boys.
All right, some other news and notes. I think an interesting thing is that Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez will play in the Futures game at All-Star Week.
It's good to see, man. Anytime I can watch Aaron Judge play baseball, I'm happy. Yeah. So
The world is going to see Aaron Judge now.
The world is going to see Aaron Judge, so hopefully he can kind of be on display and show something. But Gary Sanchez as well, who's having a decent year, but he's there as well as one of our you know, top prospects. So it's good to see these guys out there. You know, Aaron Judge is just getting so close. All these guys are getting so close, man, and it's exciting to see.
Yeah, if you're a new listener to the podcast, I definitely recommend going back to it was, I think, episodes 4 and 5. We did the Baby Bombers, talked about a lot of the prospects, including Judge and Sanchez. We had a guest on, Dan Pfeffer, with Scott and I, and it was a really, really good 2 episodes. So definitely take a listen to that, talking about some of the prospects. Dan is, he writes for a minor league blog, so he knows a ton of stuff about these guys. But getting back to Judge, he was just promoted to AAA, and he had his first home run last week. So he's really impressed this year. And Sanchez is having an okay year. He's hitting .256 in 45 games in AA. So, you know, but it's good to see both of those guys in the future games.
And also, just a quick note on that, from you know, I've been hearing just from kind of following some of the beat guys in the minors, and I think there was a Daily News article, I think it was the News or the Post, that was talking about how, you know, in the next few weeks, we very well could see Sanchez and Bird moving up to AAA too, and that will really align a lot of our top prospects in AAA ready for action, you know, coming up at the end of the season, going into spring training. in 2016. So it's exciting seeing the resurgence of the Yankees minor leagues and really seeing these guys have some success down there, because it's been a long time since we've been able to be excited. And now we can get excited about a lot of guys. You know, there's with Ruff Steiner there as well, there's a lot of talent down there. And, you know, maybe it's not the Mike Trouts of the world or the Bryce Harpers, but these guys have very good they have potential to be very good major league players. I don't think, you know, a lot of these guys have great labeled to them. You know, I don't know. Maybe Aaron Judge, possibly Severino is a number two, I think, is where he kind of the prospects see him. But it's definitely exciting to see these guys coming up. It's it gets me going, man.
You know what it also does? It pushes some of the veterans.
That's
true. They have to play well if they want to keep their job in the majors.
No doubt about it. And we've seen some of the guys that we've heard about with, you know, Flores and Heathcott and Mason Williams come up and contribute when they first get up here. Unfortunately, they've had some injuries, but, you know, they've come up and they've contributed to the big team. And, you know, that's really cool to see. And it's good to see that we're finally getting some, you know, some dividends from our minor league system.
Speaking of injuries, some injury updates. Andrew Bailey came off the minor league disabled list, and he's starting to pitch a little bit in the minors. Although I wouldn't get too excited, because he's had a real rough go of it the last couple years with injuries. I don't know if we can expect anything from him, but he's back and pitching. Andrew Miller started to play catch this week, which is good, so that's one step closer for him. And Ellsbury's really making progress. He was running and playing catch in the outfield with the team the past couple weeks, but he's going to actually start playing in games for Single-A Tampa this coming week. And I think that's a big one, because they really need Ellsbury. We saw how thin their outfield was today with Garrett Jones in left field. So I think this team really is starting to miss Ellsbury.
Oh, no doubt about it. And just what he does at the top of that lineup. I mean, we saw in the beginning of the season how dynamic the 1-2 can be when you have Ellsbury and Gardner up there. I mean, those guys were the best in the business when they were, you know, 1-2. They're creating havoc on the base path, just, you know, taking advantage of a lot of the opportunities that they had on the base path, getting on base a ton. So they really kind of fed off of each other. And when Ellsbury comes back, it's going to be kind of like we're getting a center fielder at the trade deadline. It's going to be a huge jump start to this offense.
Yeah, and deja vu all over again, Brendan Ryan is on the DL.
The mustache, the lone mustache. He can't catch a break, man. This guy just keeps getting injured, and I feel bad for the guy, because, you know, I've actually started to like Brendan Ryan as a player. I didn't really know too much about him, but the YES Network did some, did an interview with him. I don't know if you saw this, but it was he's kind of a goofball. He's kind of a goofy guy behind the scenes too. But just seeing his personality, I learned more about Brendan Ryan, so I was kind of rooting for him. So unfortunately for him,
I'll have to check that out. I was not able to see that, but I do feel bad for him, because he was actually playing pretty well when he came back. And it's just, I don't know. I think he's just doomed to be on the DL this year.
Yeah, I think so too. He's just, and you know, when some of these guys get back, is there going to be a spot for him if we call up anybody? Who knows? But Stephen Drew's still on the team, so that's promising for him.
I feel like they're really wearing out the Scranton to New York shuttle.
Yeah,
I feel like every day there's like two guys called up and two guys sent down. So a lot of news and notes going on with this team in recent weeks.
Yeah, there's a new right-handed pitcher in the bullpen pretty much every other day.
I know.
It seems like. So yeah, they've definitely been trying to experiment with these guys. And, you know, when the bullpen gets overworked, they'll bring a guy up and send a guy like Petit down. So it's going to be, I think that's going to happen quite a bit though. I think Girardi's going to, because there is that extra guy that we can kind of flip-flop with the utility infielder and the flexibility of our starting in, well, with Drew and Perella has, you know, there's opportunities for a lot of guys going up and down.
Yeah, hopefully Petit is signing up for points on whatever airline he's flying, because he's really flying back and forth to Scranton a bunch.
Yep,
get those points, baby. All right, so we don't have any voicemails or mailbags for this week to discuss, but I do want to encourage everyone to definitely write in and call in. We've had some great contributions in the past. Because Scott and I have sort of been MIA this week, we feel like we're going to hold off till next week to get some of that stuff going. But definitely call in, and we'll play them, and we'll talk about them next week. All right, so I think that pretty much wraps up for this week. As we said, big three games three games in Los Angeles, and then big three-game series coming up for Tampa. Yankees have sort of been 500, treading water lately, but hopefully they can start playing a little bit better while I'm watching them finally, which is good.
Yeah, you know, this is going to be a big set. This is a big week for them. I think going out west, again, like I said, I cringe when they go out west. Just pretty much in my whole life watching the Yankees, those West Coast trips have always just been a thorn in the side. So it's never easy making that long flight and then playing baseball. And then they're coming back and playing one of the top division rivals in the Tampa Bay Rays. So hopefully we can get some momentum going into that series and come out with some W's.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.